Itching to hit the stop button before it's over.
There's a reason.
It's a theme song. You gotta let the theme song play out.
No, I know that. I just the theme song is real happy. I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful for Love Theme from Linoleum Knife.
You better be.
I am, because it was gifted to us.
Yes.
By the very talented Blue.
Yes.
But you know, I hate things that are happy.
Well, you know, you keep asking all of your skronk friends to give us something, and they don't come through. Pop is better.
The couple that I've talked to have been like, yeah, and then...
Yeah, and then they unlike, go do then they go do more heroin.
Unlike Blue,
who has a work ethic.
Unlike Blue, the rest of them...
are useless.
They're taking it easy.
Mm-hmm.
They take life easily. And therefore, we have a theme song.
That's right.
Right now, I'm sure that more of them will eventually come through.
Mm-hmm. In the meantime, I am thrilled with this one.
No, I am thrilled with this one. I don't want that to be misunderstood. I like this theme song.
You just want to mix it up.
I get impatient to mix it up, mm-hmm. and. I need one that also sounds like death, which is one of my favorite things. And it's one of my hobbies.
I'm perfectly happy having you not have a turn when it comes to theme music.
This is Linoleum Knife.
Yes, it is.
It's a podcast of the cinema, mm-hmm. starring me, Dave White. I'm from movies.com. I'm the film critic of movies.com.
And I'm his boss, Alonzo Duraldi.
You're my shorty.
Of therap.com and What the Flick.
You're my shorty because I am 1 inch taller than you are.
Yes.
And it's uncool to call people, you know, your boo.
Yeah.
That word is over.
Yeah.
Even though you are.
Somebody in R&B ruined that. I forget who now.
Ja Rule and her name. What was her name?
Ashanti?
Yeah. Thank you. She did it.
Mm-hmm.
It's her fault.
Yes.
No, you know who? You know, it's Kelly Rowland's fault, really. It's any number of their faults.
It's also Eugene Levy's fault.
Also that.
Because of from bringing down the house.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we have a lot of movies.
We do.
That we're talking about.
Because this week. There was a bunch this week, and we're finally getting to Under the Skin because Dave
saw it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did not see the press screenings. I did not review it for... Movies.com.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to review it for us?
I am.
We're going to talk about it.
I am. First, I will discuss it with you today.
Okay.
Then I will probably discuss it with you more. Eventually, I will write something about it. Because it's still in very limited release. Like, it's not...
It's slowly getting out there.
It's moving out around the country.
Yeah.
Into the cinemas of wherever people are going to walk out. During their viewing.
That's probably happening experience. Here.
I saw it at the Arclight Thursday or Friday afternoon, and there were no walkouts. Of course, there were only like 15 people in the theater.
Right.
They stayed right through to the end. There were some chatty people off to the side where I was. They were...
Well,
I could hear them going...
I thought one of the benefits of the arc light was that you had somebody to tattle to.
Well, they weren't disturbing me.
Oh, okay.
I could just, every once in a while, I could hear them lean into each other and be like, believe me, in the world of people who bother me in theaters, this was nothing. Because the night before that.
This was not even DEF CON 5.
Yeah, no, it was Friday afternoon when I saw Under the Skin. And I know because on Thursday night, I had to stay up late. To go see Oculus.
Right.
Because I had missed the press screenings for that as well. I'm not sitting around here doing nothing, missing press screenings, by the way. What's happening lately, I'm just going to digress a little bit here. A thing that did not used to happen is major films, wide release films, used to not counter schedule with each other.
Right.
They used to stay out of each other's way when it came to press screenings.
And technically, these guys all register these screenings with the MPAA to avoid just this sort of thing.
Yeah, but now they're doing it on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
They are intentionally screening things opposite other big movies. Yeah. And I believe this is a strategy. I mean, I don't even have to believe it. It is a strategy to divide whatever outlet. You know, if the outlet is big enough to have more than one person reviewing for them, they might not send their biggest hitter to the crap, and therefore they might have a better opportunity at having a review that isn't negative.
Right, and a lot of outlets don't necessarily have more than one person.
Such as Movies.com.
Yes.
I mean, we have other people who review for the site.
Right, but you're the principal.
Eric, my current editor, he writes reviews sometimes.
And the schmoes are on there.
The schmoes are on there doing video reviews.
But your column is supposed to be
film critic of Movies.com, if you know what I mean. Since 05. 05.
Since you sent Gray Drake packing.
My ninth year at Movies.com.
Oh, no, actually, wait. How long was Gray there? She was there for a while. She was as your
I got rid of her real fast.
Yeah, Jen Yamato, bolted. It was and then
Jen.
Gray.
Well, there was a woman before Jen, if you remember that.
I remember that there was one. I couldn't tell you her name.
I don't remember her name either. She does not live in Los Angeles. She lives up in the Northwest somewhere. And they fired her or something. I don't know what they did. I don't know why she was gone.
Yeah, we never met her.
I never met her. They got rid of her. She didn't last very long. They got rid of her. I never read her reviews. Way to go, me. Being collegial and all. Is that how you say that
word? I think it's collegial.
Is it collegial?
Yeah.
When I was a teacher, I used to hear people say collegial. But then again, that's public school teaching for you.
In Texas.
Where
English is not their first language.
We gotta look up how to pronounce that word. and then came Jen, who is now with Deadline.
Right. And she just did a really great piece about the crew member who died on that Allman Brothers movie.
Jen Yamato, a woman I adore. And then Gray Drake, who is my lady brother. but now it's just me again. No more he said, she said reviews.
Right. Gray is over at Rotten Tomatoes. And in fact, she and Matt Ashity have just started doing a podcast of their own.
Rotten Tomatoes podcast.
It is not on iTunes yet, but it will be apparently. And this
episode one is only 19 minutes long. Yeah. So you're totally not going to have to invest any time listening to it.
And this is in addition to Rotten Tomatoes Radio that they do twice a week at SiriusXM. So according to Google, the choices are collegial or collegial. But there's no hard G in that.
I just learned a thing. Mm-hmm. I learned how to say a word.
And so did our listeners.
Yeah. what were we talking about? We were about to start talking about Under the Skin.
Critics.
Oh, no. I'm backing up. I'm going to back myself up. The whispering people did not annoy me because the night before I was at the Grove at 10 p.m. to see Oculus.
Right.
And there were people who just were texting through the entire film.
Ugh.
And it was because, you know, 10 o'clock on a Thursday night.
Horror movie.
You're not, if you go to that if you go to that
expecting reverent silence,
and you expect any kind of decent behavior from anyone, you're asking for an aneurysm. So my rules don't apply in that situation.
Sure.
Movies that are aimed at little kids.
Yeah.
There will not be any peace or quiet in those films. Horror movies, same thing. You're going to get the lowest common denominator of humanity.
Shut that baby up.
At a horror movie. And you can't fight it. You can't stress about it.
No.
It just is what it is.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. And so was all kinds of texting going on during Oculus.
As long as we're griping, I have to say, we had an awesome invite Thursday night to go to opening night of the TCM Film Festival to see the beautifully restored new print of Oklahoma at Man's Chinese Theater, Grauman's Chinese.
Shirley Jones,
your TV mom, was in attendance.
Exactly.
It was a whole thing. I saw pictures from the red carpet. Kim Novak was there. It was a whole to-do. You had to go see Oculus.
and I had to go see Rio 2.
That's our life. That's the glamour of film criticism, is that sometimes...
You know, it's pronounced collegial.
Oh, thank you. Sometimes we get invited to great stuff, and then we don't get to go...
I think your phone is making us do...
Something's making us crackle.
Staticky noise.
Anyway, we live in a city that has this extraordinary movie-going opportunities. You know, we belong to Cinefamily, and we get their look at their calendar of all these great things, and most of those great things we miss because
of our jobs.
There's a new Adam Sandler movie.
Boo-hoo.
Opening.
Boo-hoo.
I know. Ultimately, boo-hoo. I'm not a janitor in a slaughterhouse, as I like to tell people. I don't have a job I can complain about. But I'm complaining anyway.
I could probably work in a slaughterhouse, okay.
Yeah, probably.
It wouldn't bother me too much.
I could see you stunning an ox.
I could do the slaughtering. That would not phase me at all.
You're not going to apprentice to a butcher, it's the only other option I see of you wearing a bloody apron all day.
the thing about I did in fact go look this up. Butcher apprenticeship.
Uh-huh.
It takes a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And it helps if you're not about to become 50 years old.
Yes, you have to be able to.
You have to be
lift
sort of
sides of beef.
You have to be sort of young, and grow with that job.
Right.
It's not the kind of thing that they recommend. Soft-assed 50-year-old journalists / memoirists / film critics.
It was like Daniel Day-Lewis becoming a
nice
cobbler.
It's a nice fantasy. I will always love the idea of working in an environment where I can just...
cold and you're surrounded by viscera.
It's 40 degrees and I can cut meat all day. I think that would be terrific. But I'm not going to do an internship when I'm 50 years old.
Oh, well.
I'm fixing to be 50, by the way.
It's true.
Listeners, June 7th, on the same day as Prince... And also the same day as our filmmaker friend, Dean DeBlois.
Yeah, that's right.
I remember that every year.
That's right, yes. He had to have your birthday.
And I think I have his birthday now because he's the famous
well, that's
one.
That's true. Fair enough.
Yeah. Once I've had like three successful animated films in multiplexes across the country, then I can say that he has my birthday.
Fair enough.
Although I had this birthday first because I'm older than
he is.
That's
right.
He ain't going to be 50 this year.
You.
I'm fixing to be 50.
We should ask him to come on the show.
I think that's a really good idea.
When he's got Dragon 2.
He's got no time to come on the
show. Probably not, but we can ask him, you know. Maybe he can come on.
The man is busy.
Maybe he can come on to plug the DVD release.
He might
at the end of the year.
Be less busy then. Okay, so Under the Skin. Which is the one we're catching up on.
Yes. Jonathan Glazer's first film in a decade. He is the guy who directed Sexy Beast, and after that, Birth, which is one of my favorite movies of the first decade of the century, and has not made a film since then. Like, he's really been making us wait for it.
Takes his time.
Yeah, I don't know because Sexy Beast and Birth were only about, what, 3 or 4 years apart?
Yeah, well, I'm sure that in spite of the presence of Scarlett Johansson, I'm sure this took him a long time to convince anyone to give him money to make.
Mm.
I bet that the presence of Scarlett Johansson is what finally got him the money to make it. Because if you look at this film's script, I bet it reads as weirdly as it plays when you're watching it.
Well, oddly, it's based on a book, which I have not read, but Matt Atchity has. Yeah. And he says, yeah, the book's really different. The book's more about corporate farming.
Really?
Which, there is no corporate farming in this movie. So I don't know what exactly this is based on.
Seriously?
That's seriously, corporate farming.
I'm sorry. Pause this podcast for just a moment while I go.
Okay, so Dave didn't believe me or Matt Atchity, so he had to look it up for himself.
It is some sort of about factory farming. Yeah.
Not that you would get that from the film.
No. Here's what happens. Scarlett Johansson is a woman, that's in quotation marks. She has come to Scotland somehow.
Well, to Earth.
Well, we don't.
Generally. And
the film does not actually show her being a real space traveler.
The film begins with a field of stars that becomes more and more focused and eventually turns into a human eye.
That is true.
And you hear Scarlett Johansson's voice forming a list of alphabetical words as though she were learning the entire language. Yes. So I assume...
You can assume that she's an alien.
Yes.
You don't know what she is until the end of the movie.
Right.
And so you assume she's an alien, although they aren't really, you know, giving you a lot to go on.
Mm-hmm.
She then gets in a van, drives around Scotland, and does the best thing Scarlett Johansson has ever done after falling down and being photographed doing so on the internet. Glazer puts hidden cameras in this van, and she picks up real guys, like not actors.
Yeah, I didn't know this until later.
She picks up real guys, and I wish I could see the outtakes, because I know the outtakes all involve the guys saying in these impenetrable Scottish dialects that no subtitles are given to help you understand.
A Glaswegian brogue.
I guarantee you that every outtake includes one of these guys saying, you know, you look like Scarlett Johansson.
Apparently some of them are like, are you a movie star? Or like, are you a model? You're really.
Right.
Because she's wearing a black wig.
She's still Scarlett Johansson.
Well, of course, yes. But, you know.
So, she picks them up. She brings them to a place. Then things happen to them. I'm not going to tell you what.
Okay.
I am not going to tell people what happens to these people. Because even if I told you, you wouldn't know why.
Yeah.
And I might not be able to explain why. Other than there is a suggestion that she is using these men for some other purpose.
There's a
purpose that does not involve them living.
Yeah, there's a moment later on that suggests a certain level of consumption is taking place, but by whom we do not know.
And for what?
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting is that for people who want to see naked Scarlett Johansson, you get naked Scarlett Johansson in
full,
this movie.
Full.
Front and back.
Full tilt. Yeah.
But the dudes who follow her into her lair are disrobing as they go, and they have boners.
Yeah, they do.
Which is rare for cinema.
The first one does.
The first couple ones.
Yeah. Look, if you were
following naked Charles
if you were heterosexual and following her naked, you'd have a boner, too.
Look, if they didn't, I would have called it out as ridiculous. You're walking behind dat booty and not... not getting at least, you know, a little tumescent. I don't buy it.
It's pronounced collegial. So, and that's all I want to tell people about the plot, because the plot is Obviously, it's necessary because if it weren't necessary, this movie would not be so precisely and exactly made.
Right.
He has so much control over the form of this film that you feel yourself sort of pushing against the sides of it as you sit there and play the game that art and art film always forces people into, and that is, what does this mean?
Yeah.
What is this about? And I've always disliked that tendency on the part of audiences in any medium, because I force myself to step back from that as often as I can. When I'm in a museum, when I'm looking at a piece of sculpture, when I'm looking at a new painting that I've never experienced before, when I'm looking at a film like this, I don't want to go through it badgering myself with the urgent need to get it.
Well, are you special?
I am.
I think that there are films that aren't about anything and let you know early on that they aren't about anything. And
I don't believe there is any such thing as a film that isn't about anything.
Well, okay, not, let me rephrase that. Not that
so you just go rephrase.
Not that it's not about anything, but that
get
it's,
to rephrase
that they aren't necessarily telling you a story or a linear story anyway.
They're that, telling so, you a story that might not make traditional narrative
right.
sense.
But sometimes they are more about capturing a mood and yes. a place and yes. a time. I'm thinking of something like The Scent of Green Papaya. Like, things happen in that yes. movie, but it's really more about putting you inside the lives and the homes and the minutiae of these characters.
Right.
This is a movie that I think, while yes, it does operate in a very non-linear way and it doesn't give you the things that it wants to give you, it is telling a story.
Yes, it is.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to interpret what that story is while you're watching it.
I
don't think that lessens the experience in any way or
I find
violates
that,
the contract with the director or diminishes his overall goal. I think you can attempt...
It diminishes my experience.
Well, if yours, fine. But yeah. Don't throw that on everybody else. You know, I think that you can watch this movie and try to decode this movie and at the same time still be able to take in its other pleasures.
We're not arguing because I do believe that decoding is a thing that you could do maybe afterwards over a nice milkshake, for example. You could sit and think about it for the next week and wonder to yourself.
Well,
but during the course of the film, and I think this is what I was getting at, during the running time of the movie, to keep beating yourself up if you aren't getting it right away is a bad thing because it diminishes your ability to just experience the thing as it's happening.
Well, no, I'm not saying that you have to solve it. I think that you can be like you're right in your little detective notebook in your brain, like, okay, there's this and there's this and there's
right.
this, and then later sit down and look at all the clues and see what you can figure out.
Fine. As long as it doesn't make you, I'm sorry, I'm yawning while I'm talking, because you bore me.
Do go on more about sculpture, Dave White. We all want to know about your aesthetic process of observing. No one gets art like you do. You have to tell
are you,
us
are you envious of me
how to
my,
like things.
Are you envious of me and my special viewing abilities?
The word is pronounced collegial.
Just because I have a super deep understanding of everything doesn't mean you need to get all hot and bothered about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just be clear.
That's fascinating.
No, I want to just have my moment with this thing. I'll think about it later.
I'm not saying
that's and where I'm going with this, as I was about to say before,
mm-hmm.
people go to stuff like this and they allow the film or the whatever the thing it is they're looking at to get them upset.
Well, yes.
Because they don't get it right away. And if it confuses them or makes them feel uncomfortable or even bores them,
Then they leap straight to that was stupid.
they lead straight to that was stupid. And it might not be stupid. I mean, maybe it's stupid, but maybe you're stupid. And so at least one of our listeners knows what this is about. Our stupidest listener. Whoever our stupidest listener is, they know what this feeling is like.
In my review,
please write us if you are our stupidest listener. We keep waiting to hear from you.
Several people have claimed that.
Several people have tried to let us know that they think they are the stupidest listener.
But they form cogent sentences.
But these are people who can write sentences. I'm about to say, so far, that the stupidest listener we have is the one that said, New Zealand is full of atheists.
I don't think he's a listener. I think he just read your article and went away.
I'm hoping he's a listener.
Yeah.
Dude, if you are a listener, write us again and tell us more about your experience in New Zealand. Because we think you are probably stupid, but we need more proof.
And we could be wrong.
We could be wrong. Maybe you're super brilliant.
We're open to acknowledging that.
Yeah.
You made me completely forget what I was going to say now. In my review in TheWrap.com, I talked about how nowadays we have kind of come to this collective agreement about what 2001 is about.
Yeah.
And what happens in it.
Yes.
But it took a while to get there. When that movie first opened, a lot of people were of the, well, that was dumb. That didn't make any sense at all. You have to be high to watch this movie, you know. And I think that, you know, but after time and after people saw it and the, you know, you would read things about it. Like, I think now we all kind of agree what happens in that film and why and what the story is. And I think that will happen with this film too, that once enough people see it and discuss it and enough, you know, we start seeing other films that borrow from it or whatever, that just that there will be that point collectively where we decide, oh, well, of course, in this scene, she's doing blah, 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 and this is about the part where, yada, yada. I mean, this movie does mean something. It's just not telling you offhand.
So far, here are my thoughts, without going into plot. There is a moment about halfway through the film where she changes.
Right.
I will not say how she changes, but it is a noticeable change in both dialogue and action.
And performance. And
yes. I also believe that the fact that Scarlett Johansson is the star of this film matters. Because what is happening...
Because she's entering a ghost world?
Because something gets lost in translation? Because she's on an island. Are you done?
Hang on.
Are you done?
Because she's an Avenger?
Are you done? Are you actually done now?
Because she is a horse whisperer? Okay, I'm done.
Are you actually done?
I'm actually done.
Actual done?
Yes.
All right. I think there is a lot. One of our film critic friends was talking about Scarlett Johansson, why she was cast.
Mm-hmm.
And I jokingly said, oh, it was John. And I jokingly said, well, what if they put Red Fox in the main role of the Earth? It would be a totally different movie.
Well, no, he wasn't asking why she was cast. He said that would people take this movie as seriously if it weren't her in the role?
What I'm saying is that it needs to be an objectively understood, intoxicatingly beautiful person. Someone who everyone can look at and go, oh, yeah, that.
Right.
You know, because I think there's a lot going on in this movie about gender identity and how people react to beautiful people,
mm-hmm.
what power those people have over others, both as human beings and as movie stars.
Hmm.
Anyway,
so you're saying Kate?
I know we're speaking very vaguely about this movie, but it kind of requires that we do that.
Yeah, I mean, to discuss it in detail is to give away a lot and to get into really strange places anyway that you want to just discover on your
own. You want to experience this movie by yourself. And I think it has a lot in common with sort of Antonioni films. That's how I see it.
Yeah, and Nicholas Roeg films, not just The Man Who Fell to Earth, but even something like Picnic at Hanging Rock.
That sense of mystery and strangeness that happens in those directors' movies. We sound so lucid right now.
Well, this is a podcast of the cinema.
It is. Okay, so Rio 2.
Just say quick, let's talk about Rio 2.
Here's what happens in Rio 2. Lots of this. Lots of...
Not literally, as you might expect from a kid's movie, but... I defy anyone who is not a parent who's been forced to watch it over and over again, or a child under the age of 10, to remember what happened in the first Rio. Like, I saw that movie, and it slid right out of me. I mean, it just... zipped through my brain.
So really it is
basically like was ejected out of my brain without taking purchase anywhere. I remember there's some big shots of the birds flying around that big Jesus statue in Rio, and that movie came out around the time that Fast Five came out, which also had like the big helicopter shot of the thing in Rio. But yeah, it's a complete, for me, the one thing I remember of Rio was less terrible than the Ice Age movies.
Yes.
That was it. That was my takeaway.
As a franchise, and now it is going to be a franchise, it is less terrible than the Ice Age movies. And the reason it's less terrible is because it has elaborate song and dance numbers.
Yes.
Big production numbers.
And appropriately colorful ones because the characters themselves are brightly colored.
Yeah. It's all these swirling beaks and feathers and these sort of Busby Berkeley-like geometric patterns.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. But I wish I had listened to the B-Movies podcast to talk about this film after we recorded this, because all I can think about are the hilarious things that Bibbs and Whitney said about it while discussing it. So I lead you to the B-Movies podcast right now.
And we are never again listening to it before we record.
They are going to tell you all the... they're going to get into the minutia of this film in a way that I just don't feel like doing.
But, the musical numbers are fun. The songs are non-painful. There's some...
Kristen Chenoweth's song Chenoweth about her poisonous love is my favorite thing in the movie.
Yeah, that's definitely the highlight. But then at some point they stop singing and we're back to the completely dull plot, which is...
Plots.
Yeah, true. Yeah, there's about 80 things going on in this movie. You've got the Jesse Eisenberg and Anne Hathaway macaws going into the Amazon.
They are boring characters, and they are not nice. She's not nice to him. They're spouses, and she is impatient and unpleasant to him, and he can't get a break on any level at any point in the film, and is, in fact, one of the most ineffectual cartoon heroes that I have seen in recent memory. And I don't understand why he's the focus of these films.
Well, the idea...
Everything else around him that is sort of half-assedly interesting to look at.
It's a tepid fish-out-of-water thing. He's been raised in captivity in the United States, and, they're all, wild and free and South American, and, he wants his...
He gets his balls continuously busted in both films.
Yeah.
The first movie, I remember this. He was the object of derision in the first film because book learning. Mm-hmm. Like he'd grown up in a library or a bookstore. And everyone else was like, go with your gut. Go with your feelings. And I remember thinking while watching the first movie, no. Go with your brain. Use your brain. This is one
read
thing
a damn book.
This is one thing they said yesterday on the on the B movies is that all the messages are wrong. And that's true. All the messages are completely wrong. In the first Rio, the message was, don't read books and learn things. Go with your gut. Go with your heart. Going with your gut and heart will get you, first of all, nowhere. Secondly, probably divorced eventually. Or thirdly, maybe even killed. And so...
Or arrested.
Those are all the bad things that happen to you. Learn stuff. Read books. Go with your brain.
Exercise logic.
Do that, children watching Rio. Rio 2, I don't even know what the point of Rio 2 is. Like, they said it on B-movies. Do whatever it takes to please your spouse, even if it's irrational, completely unreasonable.
And she's completely ungrateful about it.
And no thought is involved at all. And the spouse is completely ingrate about it.
Yeah, there's about 80 stories going on here. Like I said, you've got Eisenberg and Hathaway going back to the Amazon because they find out that they're not the only blue macaws left in the world. You have... the humans, voiced by Leslie Mann and Rodrigo Santoro, trying to save the last blue macaws by stopping an illegal logging operation in the rainforest.
Run by Miguel Ferrer.
You have the Jermaine Clement cockatoo from the first movie. And again...
Acting gay.
Again, I do not remember what happens in the first movie. I don't know why he's so mad at Jesse Eisenberg, but he is and wants to...
Nemesis.
Kill him with the help of poison frog Kristen Chenoweth, who is madly in love with him.
Madly in love with Jermaine Clement.
And then you've got... Once they find the blue macaws, it turns out that they are led by... Anne Hathaway's dad, who's played by Andy Garcia.
He's like the great Santini. Like he keeps like...
Pushing around Jesse Eisenberg. Her old boyfriend is Bruno Mars, and he's creeping around and being a jerk.
Janelle Monáe is in there somewhere. I don't even know who she was.
I thought she was the sloth, maybe, but apparently not.
I don't know.
Rita Moreno is the aunt, but she doesn't get any fun moments, so who cares? This movie's just, again, when they sing and dance.
Fun to look at when they sing and dance. I like it when they sing and dance.
Yeah.
Everything else, as I was saying to someone the other day, children, little kids who are stupid and will like anything, they will like it. I was turned into a child while I watched it. Because while I watched it, I just kept thinking, when's it going to be over?
I want to go home.
Yeah. So, on Rio 2.
Yeah. Thankfully, it did not beat out Captain America this weekend.
Oh, it did not?
Nope. It was a close second.
Take that, Rio 2.
There will still be a Rio 3, I guarantee to you.
Well, yeah. Oculus. I saw Oculus.
Yes, you did.
It's about a haunted mirror.
Mm-hmm.
That tricks you.
A deep, dark, truthful mirror?
It's a haunted mirror that tricks you. And bad things happen. Scary things happen. Mm-hmm. Unexpected things happen. Some gross things happen, but it's actually not a gory film. It's all about the structure and the suspense and the tricking you.
Mm-hmm.
Tricking you into thinking something's happened while something else is happening. Instead... the characters themselves are being tricked by the haunted mirror. This, much like Under the Skin, I don't want to talk about too much the plot because it's more fun to just go experience it.
Were you scared? I know you're a tough nut on that sort of thing, but
scared-ish, mm-hmm. Mostly because one of my recurring nightmares, as you know.
Oh, I just know the part where you yell and I have to calm you down. I don't know what's going on in there.
So about every 2 to 3 weeks, I have a nightmare.
Mm.
Here's my nightmare. Somebody is in the house. This house.
Okay.
Somebody is in this house. And there's no way for me to get out. And they're going to get me. And they chase me into as many rooms of the house as possible. And I elude them. And eventually, I realize I'm trapped. I try to stand up to them. They murder me. At that point, I wake up yelling. And I wake you up with my yelling.
Yes.
And then you go, shh, you had a nightmare. And that is a very comforting and loving spousal thing for you to do. I appreciate that.
I'm tempted to start keeping a Michael Myers mask by the bed.
If you do that, I will then have a heart attack and die. So you should rethink that idea.
I will always calm you down.
Then, yeah, I'm grateful for that. I mean, you could just get annoyed. Like, again with the waking me up. But, yeah, I have that nightmare. And so this movie...
taps into that?
Tapped a little bit of that because there's stuff in the house. It did not scare me the way Sinister scared me. Sinister unnerved me. And here's the funny thing about Sinister is that it scared me even though... Looking back on it, it doesn't fully make sense. Because it involves a gradual discovery of the sinister stuff that should have actually all happened at once. So, like Ethan Hawke sort of slowly unravels the mystery of Sinister when he could have just been like, oh, okay, well, I'll just go through all this stuff right now. And instead, he goes through it piece by piece, like day by day. And you're like, what? You're just going to leave it up there in the attic? Like, it doesn't really make sense. But it's still completely unnerving. And I was spooked and scared by Sinister. Mm-hmm. This one, not as much. But it's still a fun movie. And it's well made.
Okay.
It stars two young adult actors whose names I cannot remember off the top of my head, but he is Australian and he's got about 5 movies coming out, so he's going to be a thing.
And she's on Doctor Who.
She's on Doctor Who, so if you know Doctor Who, if you watch Doctor Who, you know who this she is. She's got red hair. Gillen, I think is her last name.
Karen Gillen. Brenton Thwaites.
Yeah, that's a name.
Mm-hmm.
Thwaites. So yeah, they are going to be... they're both going to be somebody because they've both got stuff coming up, and they're good in this film. So yeah, if you like horror movies, I think it runs the risk of being overhyped, but it's pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dave.
I know you're not going to.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Who is Linoleum Knife brought to you by?
I don't know.
I believe you do.
Do I?
I think so.
Wait, I do. Linoleum Knife is brought to you by The Real Truth. Everything you didn't know you needed to know about making an independent film by Reed Martin from Faber and Faber Publishing. The name of that book, again, is The Real, R-E-E-L, Truth. And this is a commercial for The Real Truth. There are literally... I'm just going to read the copy today because I don't have anything to say. There are literally... hundreds of ways that aspiring filmmakers and struggling screenwriters let themselves down. And as Mickey Rourke once said to me personally, while we were shopping at Gelson's together one day, I did see him in there one day.
Yes, yes.
It was back before I knew that I stopped paying attention to Mickey Rourke, a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, before his career took a nosedive, I had already stopped paying attention to him. I think Angel Heart.
Wow.
Was when I was like, okay, well, that was a Mickey Rourke movie that I just saw. And some of my Christian friends from Texas were berating me for having gone to see it. Which made me just want to tell more of them that I went to see it. And after that movie, I just thought, okay, well, I don't really feel like I have to pay attention to Mickey Rourke anymore. So I didn't. And then all of the bad things that happened to him through the 90s, all the disfigurement.
Right.
And then the struggle to correct it with all the face work and the outcome of that. I just sort of missed it all. And I hadn't really considered him at all until I saw him in the grocery store. This was a good... almost 10 years ago now.
Yeah, this is way before The Wrestler.
This is well before The Wrestler. And I saw him at the grocery store, and I was like, whoa, Mickey Rourke, what happened to you? I did not say this out loud to him.
This was your inside
voice. This was my inside, my mind voice. But it was weird. It was weird to see him up close. And
I believe your summation at the time was Rue McClanahan on a bender.
I feel bad about that now. I feel bad about having said that now.
Okay.
I mean, I made myself laugh when I said that, but I, you know, it's not nice. And you know what? I try to be nice all the time to everybody.
Uh-huh.
I do. Especially to you. Yeah. All the time.
Tell us more about the real truth, please.
Mickey Rourke once said, if you can think of 10, you're a genius. As he was buying organic strawberries at Gelson's, standing in line in front of me. I don't know if they were organic. Well, the real truth covers at least 10. No, more than 10. 100.
Mm.
Covers 100 of those landmines you are sure to run into on the road to Sundance. Even the most talented filmmakers make a lot of the same errors that could ruin their movies for good and send them to the scrap heap. And this is why a lot of your favorite filmmakers secretly have first films that never saw the light of day. You can avoid a lot of these problems by reading The Real Truth. For example, a lot of aspiring filmmakers think it is unsexy. Is that what they think about? Do they divide their problems into sexy and unsexy?
I don't. Ask a filmmaker.
That's what I'm going to start doing.
These are my sexy problems.
I'm going to divide my day into what's sexy and what's not. Starting today. For example, after this podcast, I'm going to make a pot roast.
Sexy.
That is very sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm also going to make you take out the trash.
Unsexy.
That is also very sexy. Because it's going to make the house clean. And I like clean things. If I'm going to be sexy, I like it to be clean. But these filmmakers, apparently, they think it's unsexy to think about problems that can come up on location. So guess what? The entire cast and crew get $50 parking tickets every day of the shoot, eating into your post-production budget. Or your lead actor's car gets towed every day because you're shooting without permits. And he or she decides, well, I'm done because my car keeps getting towed away. Look, I hit the mic.
Wow.
Put that on your bingo card.
Drink.
You
got to read The Real Truth, and you got to hire Gary.
I'm
Cotty.
Still reading the copy.
I'm,
don't interrupt me. I'm reading the copy.
Me,
sexy. You interrupt me while I'm reading the copy.
You were crazily digressing from the copy. So
other first timers think it's okay to run the footage back in the camera to see if they like the previous take. Well, what they don't know is that reviewing footage, even in fancy HD cameras, can create a time code break. Or time code bubble that can ruin an entire day's shooting. Believe it, you don't want to learn about time code issues the hard way.
No.
I just learned about it just now. I don't even know what that sentence meant. I just read it.
But you know it's bad.
I know it's bad. Most aspiring filmmakers don't bring a sound engineer with them when scouting locations. Why? Because they want to save money. Well, it turns out that the location they have their heart set on is totally unusable. The way Terry Gilliam and Johnny Depp discovered in Lost in La Mancha. Have you seen that movie?
I did.
Then you know.
I remember that scene.
You could just see Lost in La Mancha if you don't want to read The Real Truth.
No. No.
Sorry. That's, no, you have to read The Real Truth.
That is but one of hundreds of examples.
Terry Gilliam should have read The Real Truth.
Yes. Yes, he should have. Thinks he knows so much. You should all hire Gary Cotty, because he thinks of these things.
Our friend Gary Cotty, who works in film and television.
Yes.
Currently, he works on the television program Banshee.
He's
all about... fighting.
He's all
it's
about...
It's a terrific show.
Where are the trucks going to park, and where the trailer's going to be, who's going to wrangle the extras.
The strippers.
That's
he wrangles the strippers.
On Banshee, yes.
Yeah. Banshee
Your
is,
movie might not have strippers.
Banshee is full of strippers.
You'll have to wrangle somebody.
Which apparently they get from their location, real strippers... are portraying strippers on that show.
You don't say.
Yes.
I thought they all came from Juilliard.
No, they are actual strippers, and he wrangles them. And he's gay, so they love him.
Yes.
He's like, ladies, I'm here to wrangle you. They're like, hey, Gary. We don't have time to cover all these issues, but
no.
The Real Truth will save your movie from being a disaster. If you think that digital is forever, you will probably demagnetize at least one or two SD cards or HD cassette tapes in a dozen different ways, which is what happened to Gary Winnick, who directed Tadpole. His movie almost didn't get released because of all sorts of pixelation problems with his footage. filmmakers today, you know what they do?
What?
They will often take an SD card or an HD cassette and store it somewhere without realizing that magnetic fields from fans or air conditioning vents or even a nearby smartphone in your pocket, you dummy, can cause a loose SD card to be corrupted or demagnetized. I hate it when my SD card gets demagnetized.
It's the worst.
So much.
It's the worst.
Ruins my day.
It's unsexy.
You know what's unsexy? Your SD card getting unmagnetized.
Very unsexy.
You want your D to be S'd, not your SD to be demagnetized, if you know what I'm saying. Finally, the lack of on-set photography is another huge problem that lets indie filmmakers down. It's a 15-minute commercial. Mm. The director and producer of the shark movie Open Water discovered this when they hired somebody's sister to shoot their publicity stills using a regular pocket digital camera. The photos were not high-res enough to create the movie poster or any decent stills for the advertising campaign. And, of course, the actors in Open Water refused to get back in the ocean with sharks just to make the poster.
I wouldn't either. I don't know why they did it the first time.
What I'm trying to say is read the real truth.
Yeah, quit being stupid.
R-E-E-L. Don't get your SD card all unmagnetized.
By sharks.
Whatever, by the sharks. Favor and favor. Go buy it.
Let me tell you
when you're done buying it and done reading it, you go tell Reed Martin, number one, thank you, and number two, that we told you to buy it and read it.
As somebody who works for a film festival, I can tell you firsthand, having good stills or crappy stills is a huge, important difference.
Yeah.
Because, like, when your movie's on the festival circuit and you want people to go see it and you're in the catalog, having an awesome picture or a terrible picture makes a giant amount of difference. So even if you're being super cheap, do not skimp on your stills person.
Don't.
That's major.
Don't do it.
What Draft movies, Day.
What movie? Oh, I like Draft Day.
I did too, and I did not think I would.
Did you know who Ryan Leaf was?
I did not know who Ryan Leaf was. There was a joke about Ryan Leaf.
There's a joke about Ryan. Well, it's a kind of a joke. Audience members laughed.
Yeah, it's a reference.
And when Jennifer Garner said his name, and people in the audience laughed, I was like, "What is a Ryan Leaf?" That's what I wrote in my notebook. What is a Ryan Leaf? And then I learned. This is for all you other movie nerdos that don't pay attention to football at all. He was a very promising college football player who was a big, he was going to be a big thing. And he played in the NFL for a bit, but he was not great and he had bad behavior problems and then he became a druggie. And he went down, down, down and he became a coach, a college coach. And he got fired also for drugs. And then he started robbing people for money to get drugs, and now he's in prison.
The end.
Poor broken down Ryan Leaf.
But the good thing about Draft Day is that you don't have to know anything about football.
No, you don't.
To enjoy it.
That
and,
is true.
And I certainly don't, and I had a good time. It's a movie about work, about someone doing their job, and that can be really interesting if you do it right. Kevin Costner plays the GM of the Cleveland Browns, and it is draft day, which is when the teams go through and pick the from the most promising college players, and so it's all over the course of that day, and the decisions that he has to make, and the egos he has to placate, and the owner, and the coach, and all the other stuff, and you know, figuring out which players that maybe got into trouble, but that was just an aberration, and they're actually good guys who are dedicated, and other players who seem great on paper, but for some reason his gut is telling him that they're not going to work out. There's personal stuff going on, which is the least interesting aspect of the movie.
Well, regarding, I don't know, the Ellen Burstyn stuff was funny.
Yeah.
I liked her, and I liked her moments.
She was okay.
She was great.
I didn't buy that a woman who had been married to the team's head coach and whose son was now the general manager would be much of a pain on draft day when she knows he's got a million things going on.
That was contrived, but she sold it.
You know, he also finds out from his girlfriend, Jennifer Garner, who works with him, who works for the team, that she's pregnant. Again, you'd think maybe she would tell him tomorrow?
She could have waited a day.
It's like, you know, all these women weighing down on this guy who's got things to do. He doesn't have time for their lady problems.
I don't think that that her waiting a day to tell him that she's fixing to have his baby is the same as Osei in God's Not Dead when the lefty blogger tells her boyfriend Dean Cain that she has cancer and is going to die. And he says to her, "You had to tell me this now on this very important day of my life." Like, I think that...
If that's the new bar for everything...
I think that is mean. I think that if you are a high-powered finance person of a bank or the Wall Street, mm-hmm. and your girlfriend says to you, "I have brain cancer and I'm going to die soon," you should say, "Oh, that's... I'm very sorry for you. How can I help right now? Maybe you would like a hug or or perhaps a cookie bouquet to make it feel better." But his reaction is quite mean.
Yes.
In God's Not Dead. And it does, in fact, drive her into the arms of very bad Christian rock band, The Newsboys.
Right.
And then into an ill-thought-out conversion experience, which is...
Here's the thing.
One of the climaxes of the film, other than the death of Kevin Sorbo...
Oh, wow, you're just going to spoil everything.
Oh, who cares? First of all, we talked about God's Not Dead 3 weeks ago. And if you haven't seen it by now, you're not going to see it. And if you are waiting to see it on Netflix or whatever, just so you can laugh at it, Kevin Sorbo dies at the end. Who cares? You don't care. You're going to laugh when he dies at the end. It's like when Adam Sandler dies at the end of Click and says, "Family comes first," you know. "Sorry, I fast-forwarded through everything with the magic remote control. How could I have done that?" It's the same deal. But anyway, in this movie, when...
Now, Jennifer Garner...
When Jennifer Garner says, "I'm pregnant," you know, you think, you're going to say this on draft day.
Well, the thing is, it's a busy day.
You're going to wreck his game on draft
day. It's a busy day for her, too.
Yeah.
Because her whole thing is making sure that they don't go too crazy on the salary caps and on the signing bonuses. Honey, you got a day ahead of you. Like, have this conversation this weekend over a Mai Tai or something.
Right.
Well, he'll have a Mai Tai. You'll have an apple juice because you're pregnant.
It's real early in the pregnancy. She could still have a Mai Tai.
Fine. One.
You can, honestly, you know what you can do during pregnancy, ladies?
Smoke and drink.
You can have a glass of wine. You can totally have a glass of wine when you are pregnant. You are not going to get fetal alcohol syndrome from a glass of wine. My mom smoked during her entire pregnancy with me.
And look at you now.
My mom was an episode of Mad Men walking. There is no... Yeah, look at me now. Sturdy, handsome, successful...
Plagued by nightmares.
But, you know, a proficient maker of pot roasts.
It's true. Well, we'll see. You're making your first one.
A dude that understands deep art things.
Mm-hmm.
Sexy
and collegial.
I make a lot of sexy decisions every day. Very few unsexy decisions. What were we talking about?
The draft day.
You can have a glass of wine when you're pregnant.
Fine.
You can wait 24 hours
to tell your Kevin Costner, busy boyfriend.
Yeah, to tell Kevin Costner you can wait a little bit. Yeah. But she doesn't, and Ellen Burstyn doesn't, and that just makes everything more, you know,
kooky
in the movie. It doesn't affect Kevin Costner very much at all. He is taking it easy through this whole film.
He walks around
talking about how stressed and busy he is, but you would never know it from his performance. His performance is very sort of like, yeah,
well,
I'm going to figure this out.
He's the unsinkable Molly Brown. I mean, he does throw a laptop at one point, but that's about it.
And then he apologizes for it. He's a nice guy.
Yes.
No, this movie is actually more entertaining than I had any reason to believe it would be. You become invested in how he's going to work out all of these deals and maneuvers that he has to make to get the things he wants.
To placate all the people.
And you also find out things about football that you did not know in case you were a person like me who skips all Super Bowls to go to the movies.
I think if you do like football, this is a movie that's going to push your pleasure buttons the way that certain people's pleasure buttons were pressed during, say, the Carrie Tries On Wedding Dresses montage of the first Sex Absolutely. In the City movie.
Because it was made in direct cooperation with the NFL. So it's not going to be North Dallas 40.
Yeah.
Where they're telling you all about how everything is terrible, you know.
These are all real teams and lots and lots and lots and lots of shots of stadiums.
Yes. It's absolutely a fan-stroking experience.
Yeah. Like, if you buy the NFL package, they should just give you this movie for free.
Yeah. And I, again, care not one whit about football.
Ditto.
But I enjoyed this.
Yeah.
And I do love a good sports movie.
Sure.
Like, as we mentioned before, North Dallas 40, I love Rudy that you have never
seen. I've never seen it.
Oh, my God, that you've never seen Rudy. It drives me crazy.
I love Semi-Tough.
It makes me crazy that and you've never seen Rudy.
I love sports movies with Kevin Costner. I love like Field of Dreams and
I really
Tim
like
Cup and Bull
Durham. I love sports movies about the guys playing them or the ladies playing them.
This is I think
I will say this. There's a golfing movie with Taraji P. Henson coming out soon that I do not think I want to see.
Is she the golfer?
She's a golf coach, coaching sort of like the Bad News Bears of golf.
Is she a heterosexual?
I think she is.
Okay, already I don't buy it.
Yeah, but
I like a movie that takes me into the life of someone about which I will know nothing and gives me a really full idea of what it is they do for a living. I don't know anything about football. I don't know what football general managers do. Now I feel like I might have some idea of what a football general manager does because I've seen this movie. I mean, and I'm sure an actual general manager will say, oh, but, you know, it seemed like it was a legitimate portrayal of that sort of thing.
I saw this movie once where something like this happened, and a man, Kevin Costner, played a general manager. I know everything now about what a general manager
does. One of the cool things we get out of movies is sort of windows into lives that we would otherwise
Unless
never
those lives
ever encounter.
Are completely fake.
Right. So I don't know. I'm not saying this is total true like how sports works, but I found myself really interested in it. So yeah, even if you think football, you might actually like this movie.
I was really worried that we were going to dislike this film because we know Catherine
Reitman
and she is Ivan Reitman's daughter. He directed the movie, and I was like, what if I hate this movie and will Catherine be mad at me? And it didn't. I mean, obviously, I didn't.
Here's
care,
the thing.
Care that much, but
Catherine, I don't know if you're listening. You're a
she's not.
A new mom.
She just had a baby.
So
she's not.
You've got
listening.
Better things to do with your time. You're awesome, and your dad has directed many fine films. He's also directed some real stinkers. I'm sorry. That's just how it is. And I defy you to tell me to like defend Legal Eagles sometime. Because I don't think you will. I think we're all just going to agree that, you know, that was a misstep. But it doesn't affect my feelings for you at all.
I just didn't want to post.
I also didn't like Labor Day, which your brother directed. It's just one of those things.
I just didn't want to post. Her brother did direct Labor Day.
Yeah, and you totally trashed that movie. So too late. That ship is
sailed. That movie's terrible.
Catherine either likes us or doesn't like us.
Well, she hasn't unfriended us on Facebook.
There you go.
So
I'm taking that as a good sign. This is why critics shouldn't live in Los Angeles.
I know. You wind up meeting people and
it all gets awkward.
They're all nice to you. And then you're like, wait, I didn't like your movie. Back in the day when I used to interview actors and stuff, if they were foolish enough to ask me directly if I liked the film and I didn't like the film, I would just tell them.
Like, give me an example.
Well, Brittany Murphy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
About Girl Interrupted?
No. I think Girl Interrupted was kind of cool.
Oh.
And she's great in Girl Interrupted.
Which, Cherry Falls?
No, I like Cherry Falls, too. She was in an Alan Rudolph
movie.
Yeah, called Trixie.
That's right.
And we were talking about it, and she's like, did you see it? And I was like, yeah. She goes, did you like it? And I was like, no. I said, but I kept telling the truth. Because even in bad films,
she was always
great.
Sure.
Like, people forget because of that series of rom-coms that she did that were no good.
Little Black Book and whatever.
That she was really terrific.
Yeah.
That she was always sort of the shiny, interesting thing in a movie that wasn't good. And if the movie was good, that just pushed her to be even better.
Sure.
She was wonderful. And so I felt confident in that moment to be like, no, I didn't like that movie, but I liked you in that movie. I thought you were really cool in that movie, but I didn't like the movie. And she was fine with that.
Whatever happened to Alan Rudolph?
I don't know. He kept making stuff like Trixie, and I guess he doesn't do that anymore.
That's too bad, because he made some...
I don't know what he does.
He made good movies, too, but he hasn't made anything in a long time. I wonder where...
Wait, I'm going to IMDb at. Him right All now. Right. Alan Rudolph. What you doing, Alan Rudolph? Mrs. Parker in the Vicious Circle.
Yeah, I mean, you know...
Alan Rudolph.
I loved The Secret Lives of Dentists. That was the last movie
he has not directed a film since 2002.
Wow.
I wonder what he's been doing.
I don't know. Does his biography say, or that's shocking? Because he was, you know, he was like an Altman protege.
I know,
and he was very steadily working from like 1977 or so onward, like from Welcome to L.A. onward.
The bio says nothing.
I think there might have been an article recently, but I'm going to look this up. If I find the article of what the heck happened to Alan Rudolph, I'll post it on our Facebook page. Because he's, you know, God, Choose Me is still great,
right.
and The Moderns, and I liked Love at Large.
I never saw that.
That one with Demi Moore, I didn't see it. Mortal Thoughts. He did that very strange Breakfast of Champions movie, which didn't really work, but I thought it was a noble effort. Yeah, he's a cool filmmaker. That would suck if he's... not doing it anymore.
Let's talk about Only Lovers Left Alive.
Yes!
And let's save Joe for next time.
Oh, right. Okay.
Just for time's sake.
All right. Yep. Well, next week we'll talk about Joe, which is the new film from David Gordon Green, which stars...
And you can watch... It's on demand. You can watch it streaming if you want.
Really?
That's what I hear.
Stars Nicolas Cage.
I heard it's streaming.
Okay.
Like, it's in some theaters right now, but it's also, I hear, it's on demand.
Okay, well, yeah, if you have time this week, check out Joe, and we'll be talking about it more next week.
Yeah, and just because it stars Nicolas Cage.
Do not be put off by
that's
that.
Not, yeah, it's a good movie.
It co-stars Ty Sheridan from Mud and Tree of Life, and David Gordon Green is the guy who did Prince Avalanche last year. He did Pineapple Express and All the Real Girls and George Washington and Your Highness and The Sitter. he's had a very interesting career so far.
Only Lovers Left Alive.
Yes. The new Jim Jarmusch movie about vampires, and don't turn off the
Just
show.
Like we do not want you to turn off Joe because of Nicolas Cage, do not turn off Only Lovers Left Alive
because
it is about vampires.
Yeah. Because they're cool vampires played by Tilda Swinton and Tom Hiddleston.
They're pretty great vampires.
Yeah. And in fact...
They're the kind of vampires that I believe vampires should be.
Yes.
I'm done with these damn kids.
Yeah, they're doing something with
vampires.
Their time.
You a teen vampire? Go vampire for a few hundred years and then come back to me.
Right.
And be something other than a boring teen vampire.
These are...
Be a cool vampire.
These are cool, like...
Get a record collection.
Artistically interesting, louche vampires.
Read some books.
And in fact, they are sort of knowledgeable and clued in to the point where they would kind of be insufferable if they weren't vampires.
Yeah.
But because they've had several centuries to knock around and absorb all this stuff, it's
okay. They are old school definition of the word hipster.
Yes.
They are what hipster used to mean.
Right.
They are people who... are interested in a lot of things, a lot of great things that the rest of the world isn't necessarily interested in. They sit around listening to old Wanda Jackson records. Wanda Jackson was great. Mm. A lot of people don't know who she was. She is very cool now with the hipsters, but that's because she was great, not because there's something, you know, inherently shallow or false about her.
Yeah, or that puts off the casual listener.
Yeah, that's the kind of vampire these guys are. They like good stuff. They're a bit snooty about it, but they have reason to be snooty about it because they're better than everybody else.
Yeah, when they talk about Tesla and Schumann, they knew those guys. They hung out with Einstein and, you know...
There isn't a lot that happens in this movie.
Not really,
there is a very little in way of actual conflict, and that is provided by Mia Wasikowska, who comes in playing Tilda Swinton's younger sister. She comes to...
Possibly sister in quotes. It's never clear.
She comes in from Los Angeles, which is sort of a strike against her as far as the film goes. She embodies just the worst elements of any person from Los Angeles. As opposed to me, I am what's great about this city.
It's pronounced collegial. So, you know, for example, neither Hiddleston nor Swinton, I should say, are the hunting kind of vampires.
No.
They both sort of have the hookup with, you know, their local hospitals. She's in Tangier. Well,
she's in Tangier. He's in Detroit. She gets hers from Elizabethan literary figure Christopher Marlowe.
Right. But who gets his from, you know, healthcare.
He gets his from a local hospital. He dresses up as Dr. Fink from the Revolution, and he goes to the hospital.
That's Hiddleston.
That's what he does.
Right, but I'm saying Marlowe gets his blood also from some sort of like healthcare type
thing. Oh, I thought we were now talking about
Hiddleston. I'm saying both of them get their blood from medical sources and not from the old, not the old fashioned way.
But you never see John Hurt going to get
blood. No, he just shows up with these bags, you know, and they make the point about how basically, you know, that humans have tainted their own blood supply in the same way that they've tainted the environment and the planet, you know.
And their own brains. They do talk about how stubbornly stupid the humans
are. They refer to them as zombies.
Yeah. And so it's very much a kind of a lifestyle film where you want to spend time with these people, and you also find yourself really attracted to them and their life and everything they do.
They're aggressively cool.
Yeah.
But not in
an obnoxious way. That's very seductive and
not for an audience. They just are, you know.
And Swinton is in this film.
Swinton!
That's all that really matters to me.
Yeah.
I just want her to be in all the movies.
And why nobody else said, yes, you should play a vampire who wears, like, you know, cool, you know, earth tones all the time. Or not earth tones, she wears a lot of beige and, you know.
She wears a lot of white leather, which is really good on her because she's already pale as a ghost.
Right.
Has this long, blonde, messy hair in the film. She is impossibly chic.
Yes. That's why I'm saying. Film. So why no one thought to cast her in this kind of role before, it's shocking. Right. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I'm not a giant Jarmusch fan, but I really enjoyed this one.
Yes, it's not about much.
No,
other than look what a great time these people are having. Look how unutterably cool it is to be a vampire.
Yeah,
we are stealing and reclaiming the coolness of vampires with this, you know, home tour vampire lifestyle.
I mean, I still remember, you know, when we were in college, when Lost Boys came out, you know, it was the tagline, like, sleep all day, party all night, it's fun to be a vampire. And it's like, these guys sleep all day, and then they make music and read all night, you know.
Yeah, and they do it.
And yes.
They are the best vampires in film since Grace Jones in Vamp. Or George Hamilton in Love at First Bite.
I'll give you George Hamilton. Vamp is kind of terrible.
Jones.
Grace Jones is Grace Jones.
I just said Grace Jones.
Yes.
I don't think we need to keep talking about it.
But the movie is awful.
Grace Jones. Did you hear what I said?
About
I said Grace Jones.
How about Lauren Hutton?
I said good day, sir.
How about Lauren Hutton and Once Bitten, are recounting her?
Fine. You can have her too.
Yeah, so... Only Lovers Left Alive. Go see it. DVD picks.
Bastards.
Mm.
You bastard. You bastards!
I just showed him the clip of Linda Day George in pieces.
Bastards! Claire Denis' film from last year called Bastards.
Mm-hmm.
Les Salauds. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I didn't say that right.
Probably.
It is... a dark, brooding, doom-filled movie starring Vincent Lindon, Chiara Mastroianni. He is a guy who flies a helicopter over our house.
See, if we had read the real truth, we would know that sometimes our apartment is not the appropriate location.
Yes. He learns that his bankrupt brother-in-law has committed suicide.
Okay, don't get super into this.
He goes to Paris. Hang on, I'm just reminding people.
No one cares.
Oh, really? No one cares? Are you sure?
Just do it.
What if people care more about my DVD pick than yours? Let's put it to a vote. Shall we?
No.
Listeners, whose DVD picks do you think are the best? Obviously, it's mine.
I don't know why.
Me.
You insist on these inane contests. Just be quick about it.
He learns that his bankrupt brother-in-law has committed suicide. He goes back to Paris and finds his sister all upset. Her daughter's in the hospital. She's been injured during some kind of sexual assault. He moves into the empty apartment building where Chiara Mastroianni lives. She's the wife of a wealthy industrialist, and he thinks the wealthy industrialist is responsible for the suicide of his brother-in-law. Sorry.
Gotcha.
And he becomes involved with Chiara Mastroianni. Mm. And then bad things happen. Real bad things happen. It's one of my favorite films of 2013. Mm-hmm. It's from Claire Denis, whose films you should be watching yesterday. One of the greatest living filmmakers that we have. And now it's on DVD on Tuesday. Bastards, you should see it. Also, the DVD pick that I gave last week, A Touch of Sin, from Jia Zhangke, it is streaming on Netflix.
Oh, on Netflix? Yeah. Oh, really? Okay, because it's also streaming on Amazon.
It is streaming on Netflix, so if you got Netflix, you can watch it right now.
Exciting.
Do it.
My DVD pick this week is The Human Comedy, which I think is one of the best and possibly lesser seen roles from Mickey Rooney, who passed away this week. At the age of 93, I think. One of the dramas that he made at MGM. It's based on the book by... Lord!
Thanks, Motorcycle Pals.
What is going on out there? Based on the book by William Saroyan, it's about a small town in World War II in California. And it's very low-key, and it's about kind of tiny, you know, triumphs and tragedies among... families and people living in a small town, and it's quite lovely, and he's very good in it. And Rooney had a really strange career. I mean, he was one of the biggest stars in the world when he was a teenager, and then after World War II, really kind of found it difficult to get adult roles because he still had like a kid face, and he was like 5'6".
I think it was shorter than 5'6". I think it was like 5'4" or something like that.
Yeah. But, you know, had a fascinating life and had a handful of interesting roles along the way in TV and film. Also, the appallingly racist...
I thought we talked about this last week already. Didn't we talk about Mickey Rooney last week?
Mm-mm.
Are you sure?
I don't think he had died yet.
Really?
I don't think we talked about Mickey Rooney last
week. Everybody already knows this stuff.
All right, fine.
Yeah.
Yes, say it.
Nobody cares.
Uh-huh. whatever you say, Dave White.
That's right. Hey, guys. I need to ask your professional advice. It's from Fozzie.
Mm-hmm.
Soon I am going to start screening B-movies at the cafe in my neighborhood again. I used to do this last year, and I burned through a lot of the titles one would expect. The Room, Troll 2, The Blob, Barbarella, Rappin', My Bloody Valentine, etc. When I start again, I need films that will both surprise people and bring in a crowd. Any suggestions that I am overlooking?
I'm not entirely clear what the definition of B-movie here is. Like, are they...
these beautiful.
Campy movies, or...
Well, he just gave us part of a list.
Well, I know, but like, Barbarella is sort of... I don't know. Gosh, what should he bring in, Dave?
Dragon Lives Again.
Well.
Like we just talked about last week.
We could bring that up, sure.
You should always watch The Dragon Lives Again.
If you can find it. We have a janky VHS
copy. We have a beautiful janky VHS copy.
God, what? I don't know. I kind of feel like this is a subject that's been plumbed so deeply on the internet.
Heavenly Bodies. Have you seen Heavenly Bodies?
No, I've got an even...
Heavenly Bodies.
An even better aerobics movie than Heavenly Bodies?
Is?
Ninja 3, the Domination.
Yeah.
Starring...
So there you go. There are three titles for you. The Dragon Lives Again, Heavenly Bodies, Ninja 3, the Domination. Those last two are aerobics movies.
Yes. So, and Ninja 3 stars Lucinda Dickey of Breakin' and Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo fame.
Yeah.
Fame.
Greetings, Alonzo and Dave. Alonzo, you once stated... that I haven't seen enough gay movies. Wait, who's this from? Hang on. Scrolling down. M.A. Ross.
I see.
He said, you've said that I haven't seen enough gay movies. Au contraire, mon frère. I have seen many gay movies. Some decent, but most very, very bad. Well,
I don't remember the context. Probably he called something the worst gay movie, and I said, oh, you haven't seen enough gay movies.
Here is a top 10 list with 5 good and 5 bad gay movies.
Okay.
To prove that I have indeed seen enough gay movies. Here is his list of 5 good gay movies.
Okay.
And I guess he wants us to knife these. Soldier's Girl.
Okay.
Which is... It's good.
Yeah.
Soldier's Girl's good. All Over the Guy.
Mm.
Wrong!
Yeah, I can't. I mean, there's worse out there.
There is worse than All Over the Guy. But you're never going to get me to watch it again.
Mm.
So there. Strapped, which I have not seen. He says, it's an unvarnished look at modern gay lifestyles through the eyes of a hustler. I haven't seen that one.
This vaguely rings a bell.
I'll give you the benefit of the doubt on that one. Yeah, it's your phone that's making the noise.
Okay, yeah.
Because you just moved it closer to the mic.
Yes, it's doing the thing.
So quit it.
Well, I can't look things up on my computer because my computer is recording this show.
Look it up later.
No, I need to know because he's coming after me about this whole gay movie thing.
But I'm a cheerleader.
No.
Yeah. You know what? It's weird. You and I might be the only people in the world who don't like that movie.
Oh, we're not.
Oh, we're not? We're not?
Trust me on that.
Okay. One. All right.
Yeah, I have not seen Strapped.
I going back to interviewing actors.
Oh, right. Clea DuVall.
I interviewed Clea DuVall because of But I'm a Cheerleader.
Mm-hmm.
But I had not yet seen the movie.
Ah.
So we wound up talking about bands, mostly. And I'm glad that I had not seen the film.
Because she would have asked you?
Because she would have asked me. Actually, you know what? I don't think she would have asked me. Mm. She does not care. Mm. If she is still the same person today that she was, 13 years ago when I interviewed her, she is legitimately cool. Like, she is just... a serious working actor who does not care what you think of her.
Hmm.
And because she brought up some book, and I can't remember now what book it was, but I didn't like it. Hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I hate that book. And she goes, shut up.
So there.
So she's pretty great. But yeah, if she'd said, what do you think about that movie? I'd have been like, No, Clea DuVall, no. Urbania.
Okay, I like that one.
Which is, I like that movie.
Yeah.
He writes, this is the perfect gay movie for me, so reflective of my own attitudes on queer matters. It feels like it's speaking directly about me and what I would do if I were in those situations. So, yeah.
Okay.
All right, you're down to 80 though, dude, because all over the guy.
60.
Huh?
60.
No. 80, because All Over the Guy and But I'm a Cheerleader.
Yeah, that's 2 out of 5. So
yeah, but he's got 5 bad movies.
Right. Oh, God.
We're knifing all 10.
Fine, but if you take 2 out, that's still...
Don't maths me. I'm not into it.
Fine, go on.
Here's 5 bad ones.
Okay.
Green plaid shirt.
That's a bad one.
I don't know what that is. What is that?
It's a not good love story from back in... It's an early one.
The Delta.
Ouch.
I'm going to say it again. Wrong! He said, I saw this one in the theater. Fart noise. This movie felt like it was half done. Like, they ran out of money and showed it anyway. They should have just called it The Doll. Oh. I strike you down to 70. Mm. The Delta is good.
Yeah, Iris Axe is a great filmmaker.
Iris Axe is a very good filmmaker. I wouldn't say he's a great
filmmaker. Well, you haven't seen the new one yet.
No, I haven't.
It's great. All
right. Okay, well. Maybe I'll move him up maybe from very good to great.
I'm sure he's on tenterhooks waiting to hear if that's going to happen.
You know he's listening.
Yeah.
He's listening. He's listening just as much as Catherine is listening, and then Clea Duvall is listening.
Yes, everybody
who doesn't listen to this show.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
I'm afraid to say the next title because it was written by one of our best friends.
Oh, God, on his worst list? I think I know, but go ahead.
Testosterone.
Oh.
From the novel by...
James Robert Baker, who's one of my favorite authors.
And that was adapted by our very good friend Dennis
Hensley. Yeah. And David Morton, who's also our friend.
I haven't seen David Morton in 10 years.
Well, okay. You're right. David Morton has sort of disappeared off the face of the earth. But Dennis is...
Just because you're... I'm going to read what he says. Just because your cast is gorgeous won't hide the fact that your storyline is awful. The line, "I'm just a fag with a gun who needs a chainsaw," in the trailer should have stopped me from seeing this movie. I kind of like that line movie. Even Jennifer Coolidge's vagina jokes couldn't save this film. We're going to give you this because we can't
be impartial.
We can't be impartial on this film. I did like testosterone. We love our friend.
I mean, Dennis is a good friend, but I like testosterone anyway. But I also am a fan of the novelist on whose work it was based.
Yeah. So. But we'll give it to you. I mean, obviously. I mean, do you think that Dennis has not encountered bad reviews of this movie?
I would imagine at some point.
What was the critical reception to testosterone? Negative?
Or mixed, or what? It didn't get a giant release. I don't really remember, frankly, what the critical response was. I'm sure it has a Rotten Tomatoes page, but I don't know.
Something called Wrecked, which I have not seen, from 2009. The Shemansky brothers make a movie about a nice guy who should have told his drug-addled skis of a lover to dry out and or get the hell out 5 minutes into the movie.
Missed that one?
No. Let's see how low my indecisiveness can take me in 70 minutes. Yay. I haven't seen it. Number one, Aaron, albeit a sex hero. I've never heard of this film. This movie is so wrong. The script, the acting, the lighting, the sound, the continuity, everything about this movie is bad.
Spell that?
Aaron. A-R-R-O-N?
What was the second word you said?
Albeit, A-L-B-E-I-T, a sex hero.
Albeit, I thought was the use of that word.
It's pronounced collegial.
Yes. Okay, well, you've clearly seen a lot of gay movies because you've seen a bunch that I never heard of.
But we're chopping you down three for the ones that we disagree with you on.
So that's still 70% knife.
You're 70 knife, M.A. Ross.
If you want to see a really bad gay movie, I dare you to sit through Ben and Arthur or something.
Well, Ben and Arthur is fun to watch, though. Ben and Arthur is so crazy.
True. It is.
Ben and Arthur is made by someone like who might not even be completely stable.
That's quite possible.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Are our neighbors throwing cement blocks around their apartment right now?
I don't know what's going on.
I don't know if the audio is picking that up, but it sounds like a violent match taking place downstairs.
Yeah, maybe they're throwing bowling balls at each other. I can't tell.
They might be.
It's all in the realm of possibility.
We're done.
Really? That's it on letters?
That's it. Yeah.
All right. Well, as always, we thank you for listening. Check out our friends online. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Go to RottenTomatoes.com and listen to the first episode of their podcast. And when they become available on iTunes, you can subscribe. You can also hear the Rotten Tomatoes folks twice a week on Rotten Tomatoes Radio on SiriusXM. And if you're a SiriusXM listener on OutQ, check out the Frank DeCaro show and check out Derek and Romaine. We were just on their show again on Friday, and that was always fun. Check out our friends in the podcast universe, Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, the B-Movies podcast, of course, with Bibbs and
Romaine
Whitney.
Doesn't talk to us anymore when they're on the show. She makes Derek do all the talking to us now.
No, she laughed at you for being so nerdy about Godzilla.
Okay, yep. I think she thinks we're going to just insult her all the time if she talks. So, Romain.
You're listening with Catherine and Clea Duvall.
Please come back to us, Romain. We promise. No, we don't promise to be nice.
No.
We promise. We do not promise to be nice. But we
promise to have fun with you.
We promise to have a really good time on your show.
Yes. Check out the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney. And Whitney, I hope you are genuinely not upset by my goofing on you when you tried to call me out on a what you thought was a mistake in the Apple commentary, which was not a mistake.
No, he deserved to be put down for that.
Wrong.
He deserved every...
Wrong, sir, wrong is a quote from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I wasn't just throwing that at you.
He deserved it.
Well, fine.
Deserved it.
The Schmoes know. Film Spotting SVU.
They deserve it, too.
The Schmoes, you mean, not Film Spotting.
Everybody.
Podcrash, The Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and The Lunch.
Especially those guys. Game Night Guys. Who do they think they are, anyway?
You can currently purchase our special episodes, our commentaries of The Apple and Clue. They're $1.99 each. You can just... You can PayPal us.
We've got stuff for sale.
You can PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
$1.99.
Let us know which one you're buying and where
cheap
you want it sent.
Money.
We missed a month in our goal of doing monthly commentaries, but we are doing one for April, and we are going to go ahead and announce today that it is...
Two for the road.
The 1967 Stanley Donen marital comedy drama with Albert Finney and Audrey Hepburn. One of my favorite movies of all time. We'll be recording that in the next couple of weeks, and as soon as it becomes available, we'll let you know. You can subscribe to this program on iTunes, and if you want to leave us a review there, that would be great.
Good one. Keep your bad ones to yourself.
Yes, and in fact, I want to thank, we got some plum new five-star reviews that were terrific. Here we go. Cineoso and Mr. Waturi and Vince F71. Thank you for your kind words about the program.
You anonymous internet people are great.
Yes. You can also stream the show at StitcherRadio.com Stitcher Radio.
Cineoso,
yes.
What's he look like, do you think?
just a blind stab in the dark here. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or TheLounge.com, or you can go to our Facebook page where there's an app that allows you to stream our most recent episodes. And if you haven't already liked...
Do you think we probably already know Cineoso?
It's always a possibility.
We probably already know this person.
It could be. I don't know for sure. It could just be somebody who's a Facebook friend, but we've never met him. If you have not already liked our Facebook page, please do. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast.
Basically, Oso, we are probably no more than a few Kevin Bacons away from him.
That's probably true. I will give you that.
Yeah.
You can check into the program at tvtag.com and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with any questions, comments, top 10 lists, worst 10 lists, anything else. We are always... Cinema advice, questions. We're always happy to answer. And
praise for me. Votes for who has better DVD picks.
Let it go. We thank you for joining us, and we'll catch you again next time.
Goodbye.